time to talk design. Design Duo brought to you by Gunji and Hashadewa.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Design Duo. Hasha, what are we talking about today?
Today, we are going to talk about design decision making. How to make decisions in design or in anywhere.
When it comes to decision making, I think we are making decisions every day. Inside design, outside design, but no matter what we do, I think we are making tons of decisions every day.
Yeah.
So when it comes to design decision making, Harsha, do you know, do you follow any framework or is it gut feeling that you're using? What do you usually do?
This is not particularly about design, but I have used something called the Eisenhower matrix, where it's a quadrant. You can have four areas. So one axis is about importance, not important and important. The other axis is about urgency. Is it urgent or not urgent? So based on where your item is placed, you can find whether you have to do it now, later, or whether you have to delegate it, eliminate it, something like that. And also in like product ownership, also you have these quadrants. Like one axis can be user value, how much user value you are bringing in, and the other axis is effort by the organizer, or how much effort you
Yeah, I have also used the impact versus effort matrix, maybe to prioritize the features, implement, things like that. So one thing that I have heard from maybe our listeners, our followers maybe, and the people I talk to is that sometimes no matter how many frameworks that they are and how many user tests that they are doing, sometimes you get always overruled, overridden by some expert judgment in organizations.
Yes.
So has it happened to you?
I think it happened today as well. It happens everywhere, and I think it's very common, right?
It's totally common, and it's very, very, very familiar to most of the designers. So recently, I posted something about it or some survey about it on Instagram as well, and I got really interesting responses from my friends who are designers and at least playing some role in a product organization. So sometimes there are in the organizations the culture of expert judgment and expert opinions is deeply rooted.
Yeah.
So it's very hard to remove it.
Yeah.
Overnight. So and there's an always like a consistent battle between data and expert opinion. So sometimes organizations have a set of experts who are hired to make decisions sometimes. The teams themselves think that, okay, we should go with option A.
Yeah.
But there could be some expert, really, really strong expert opinion that will push us towards option B.
Yeah.
So then it's very hard to fight with the expert opinions without having a huge convincing power with the team. So this is a very interesting topic.
Yeah, because experts come with a lot of experience and maybe with titles and recognition. So even though you feel or the team feels something else, you have to give in to the expert because he or she is the expert. So expert is the expert. You have to adhere sometimes. But it's a problem sometimes, like you said. Are there any ways to handle those kind of situations?
Yeah, there are a couple of ways that I could try out. And also sometimes before going into the steps of solutions for this, I think sometimes this is a blessing in disguise as well. Because especially in certain situations where you don't have access to end users to do your tests, or where you need to make really quick decisions, even though the decision can be a wrong decision. A decision itself is something that is very valuable, even though it's a wrong decision.
Yeah.
So you need to proceed, you need to agree on something and commit to it. So in that kind of a scenario, I think it is very useful to go with expert opinions as well. So
you mean
I'm just trying to balance it out here.
Yeah, in situations where you can't proceed because of different opinions, that happens also every day for us. And some people like option A, some people like option B, some people don't like any option. So then nobody takes a decision and you stagnate for maybe days, weeks, months. Maybe we deprioritize, right? Because we can't take a decision.
Yeah.
So that's a really good point.
Yeah. So let's think of a scenario like that. You have experts who are making expert judgments. And you have designers who wants to base decisions on user data.
Yeah.
How to combine these two? I think that is the approach that we need to find in this kind of a context.
Yeah.
So one of the first things that we need to do when it comes when you are working in a project like this, where you have experts and where you need to base your decisions on data as well.
Yeah.
I think first you need to appoint a decider.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, it's going to be very ambiguous who's going to make the call. So sometimes I have seen projects being on hold or being halted for months because as you mentioned, a decision is not being made because no one knows who's going to make the decision.
Yeah, so that happens.
So I think
appoint a decider.
Yes, number one.
Can
appoint
it be
a decider?
One decider or can be 3-4 deciders?
yes.
That's
where the problem again happens. If you have 3-4 designers, then
they will
have to make a decision among themselves.
Yeah.
And it will again take another month.
Yes. So there's always
one designer. And I think this is elaborated a bit more in modern terms in Jake Knapp's Sprint book.
Yeah.
Where in the Sprint process, they won't. In any activity where there could be disagreements, they always appoint a decider from the beginning. So no matter how much the others like option B, if the decider likes option A, the team has to go with option A.
Exactly.
So I think that's the exact thing that we are talking about.
We can say that we got inspired by Jake Knapp.
Yes. Yes. So maybe I think that should be the natural decision maker if it's a product-related decision that needs to be made. Maybe the product manager should be the decider.
Yeah.
Or if it's even a bigger decision, maybe the CEO can be the decider.
But
who has the power.
The important thing is that the decider should have the actual power, right? You can't just appoint someone, Mr. X, make him a decider who doesn't actually have the power to decide something. So that's important.
Yes, otherwise he or she will get overruled with the actual decider late. So that's number one.
Yeah.
And now our audience will think that, okay, if you are giving this power to a single person, then what's the point of having a team? So that's the number two point that I'm bringing in. And that is to give everybody a voice. So if you're working in a team, a design team or a development team with 10 people, I think everyone should voice out their opinion.
Yeah.
Before the decider makes the final call,
and
if you take the first example, option A and option B, I mean, if everyone in the team thinks that option B is the way to go, there should be a really, really good reason why the decider should pick option A. So put the decider in trouble in that way.
Yeah.
Okay, we think that this is the way to go. What do you think?
Yeah, make the decider's life hard as possible.
Yeah, maybe that's not the intention, but
but it's healthy, right? For any product to make the right decision. So if the whole team thinks option A is good, then the decider has a hard time proving that no, option B is good. So let it be like that.
Yeah. And in many design processes also, we are taking votes, for an example, like silent votes.
Yeah.
So I think that's the exact reason of doing that.
Yeah.
Give everybody a voice, then the decider will see, okay, this is what the team thinks, and I need to have my reasons to go against them.
Yeah.
So that's a confident decision that the decider is making if he's going to deviate from the team's thinking.
Yeah.
And let's say that, okay, you have the decider, now you have given everybody a voice.
A voice, yeah.
And finally, you need to bring data to the table. So sometimes I have seen designers simply giving up because they got or they did a user test with a single user.
Yeah.
And they provided that data to the designer, and designer decided others something else. And the design and these designers are getting demotivated because the data was overruled.
Yeah.
But there's a mistake that the designer is doing here as well, because you got data from a single test, or maybe two tests or three tests.
Yeah.
And you are trying to compete with an established decision maker or established powerful decision making hand by giving data from a limited number of test users.
Yeah.
So this in this
Simply
case,
not
the quantity
enough.
Really matters. Yeah, it's not enough. Quantity really matters here.
Yeah.
If you cannot compete with an expert judgment based on a single user's opinion.
When you say quantity, it's not like you need thousands, right?
No, but it shouldn't
be one or two.
Yes, it should be. I think as a rule of thumb, maybe more than five. Five or more than five would be a good number.
Yeah.
At least five, I would say.
At least five. Yeah. Start with five.
Start
with five.
Then when you bring this data and you. When you give everyone a voice and you have a clear decider, then this process will run very smoothly.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we all can try out. And if you try out, please let us know how it went.
So if we recall, the 3 points, first one is appoint a decider. Second one is give everyone a voice. Third one is bring the data. Show us
the data. Yes, a lot of data.
Yeah.
Make decisions using this simple framework and let us know how it goes.
Yeah.
If it was a disaster, we would be doing a separate episode on that.
Yeah. Cool. So let's end today.
Yes.
Discussion.
We'll see. Yep. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's time to talk design. Design Duo brought to you by Gunji and Harsha Dewa.